Welcome to the United Adoration Podcast, where we talk about songwriting, worship arts, and the revitalization of creativity in the local church. I'm Dave Frenke, and I'm the movement leader here for United Adoration. In this episode, Rachel Wilhelm and I got the opportunity to chat with Justin Carlson, a local church musician and songwriter. I hope you enjoy this fantastic interview. But yeah, man, thanks for taking time out of your day and
of course,
and to hang out with us. So
it's good to be here. Yeah.
Justin is a friend, and I met him for the first time physically in January at the Trinity. Trinity School of Ministry? Is that what it's called?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, TSM in Pittsburgh and or Ambridge. And it was really a treat to finally get to meet Justin. I'd known him through a group called Liturgy Fellowship that we're both a part of. And it's been such a blessing to us for many years, to a lot of people. I've listened to and been a fan of Justin's music. And then when I met him in January, it was really awesome because we were able to do some co-writing together. And we wrote a really cool song called He Can Take It, which I'm super proud of. We need to record it sometime, Justin, something.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask Justin to be to interview with us just because I know he's such a great songwriter and he's a great church musician. He's been doing this for years. And we really want to dive into your songwriting journey, Justin, and just hear what that's been about, and also how you write songs for your own church and your local context and what that looks like. So first, I just want to ask, what does your songwriting journey look like? I mean, when did you first start writing songs?
Yeah, it has been a very interesting journey. And in many ways, I feel like I have entered really into a season in the last few years, moving to Lexington, of learning more about myself and how I'm wired. And in a lot of ways, just feel like I'm beginning to really own the artist songwriting piece that God has given me. But I would say I probably started writing songs like all the way back to eighth grade. My dad was a Christian singer-songwriter for years in the 80s, kind of probably started late 70s, but into the 80s. Pete Carlson, Living in the Name of Love. It's crazy. I meet people every now and then who are like, wait, your dad's Pete Carlson? And oh, wow. It's just kind of wild to hear about the connections. But so I think I wrote my first song in eighth grade for a talent show. It was a pretty heavy song.
What was it about? That, like, the eighth grade songs are the best because they're just about like the most intense.
It was about divorce. I just dove right in. Yeah. Welcome to the talent show. Our first song is about divorce.
Did you win the talent show?
I don't think there was, I don't know if there were winners and losers. I can't remember. I'm sure they probably didn't. I'm sure they didn't want to give the gold medal to a song about divorce. But I'm being so real, you know?
You were real before it was cool to be real.
I know.
And then, you know, in high school, I plugged into my youth worship team and, you know, kind of dabbled here and there writing songs. And then into college, I started to do it more. And it really wasn't, I don't know. I think there was always a part of me that was kind of entangled in a lot of fear and just like, I don't know if I want to put myself out there. And I would get a taste of it and really like it. But then I think there would still be a lot of trepidation about it. But I think it really has been in the context of the church where I have been affirmed and where I have been challenged. After college, I did a youth ministry internship in Memphis, Tennessee, and you know, just happened to stumble into to leading worship for their evening service. And then our time was up there. I got married about a year into that. And we moved back to Nashville. My wife actually got a position at a church doing youth ministry. And I was like, man, I'm going to try my hand at this songwriting thing in Nashville. I grew up in Nashville. It was familiar territory, but, you know, it did not take me long to realize, man, I just don't enjoy this. Hmm. Not songwriting in general, but just trying to write songs that you know, kind of for the country music scene. I mean, I was co-writing with people and connecting with people really just for the sole purpose of writing songs that would get cut. And there's a place for that. And there are people who are wired that way and gifted that way. I just realized pretty soon, I'm like, there's just no joy in this for me. I didn't enjoy it. I felt like I couldn't write the songs that I wanted to write. I felt like I was forced to write songs that I just didn't really enjoy, but you know, they were catchy and all that. And, you know, and so it was frustrating because I felt like, okay, I still want to write songs, but I just don't know where I fit. Because I also knew that I didn't want to be a touring artist. I tried that briefly and just felt like, man, this is just not for me. And it was more like, I just don't see our marriage being wired in such a way that this is going to bless my family.
Yeah.
So I think when I really started to take the songwriting stuff seriously was when I moved from Nashville to Roanoke, Virginia. Took a job at a Church of the Holy Spirit, an Anglican church in Roanoke. And that really was like a wild card for me. I didn't know anything about Virginia, hardly. It was a new denomination, but in a lot of ways I kind of came to life there as a worship leader, but really started to write songs thinking about the church. I'd really never written worship music up to that point.
Was there something that sparked that, or did you move there with the intention of wanting to engage in that way, or was it the environment when you were there, or the atmosphere? Like, what made that transition mentally for you?
Well, that's a good question. I actually moved there to be the young adults pastor. They had created this position, and in about maybe not even 6 months into my time there, the interim worship guy moved away, and Quig Lawrence, the pastor, said, "Hey man, you want to do this?" And I said, "Well, why not?" And again, it was just another way that God kind of just pushed me in a position that I wasn't really looking for. And, I really found that I thrived, in that place. And I think, you know, again, I had written a lot of songs up to that point, but more just singer-songwriter stuff. And I think because I felt more connected to this church and started to feel more rooted in, or maybe even feeling more called to doing things within the worship paradigm, I was like, man, I'm going to just try to write some songs. And you know, I didn't write a ton for the church, but I think it started there. There was something that started to develop there. Mm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now a few years into my time in Virginia, I got a phone call from a pastor in Kentucky. And it was a church, Tate's Creek Presbyterian Church. They were planning to plant a church in the downtown area of Lexington. And they really valued having the lead pastor, but they also were like, we really want to hire someone full time that takes over the music and the arts. Like, we really want that to be central to how we plant and what we value. And they reached out to me, and I, And I went home and told my wife that the pastor had called, and she said, well, did you tell him we're not coming? And I said, well, no, I didn't. I did not tell him that, but, you know, I'd be surprised if we moved, because we loved Roanoke. We were surprised how much we loved it. And it really became, we had two of our three kids there and just felt like this is kind of where we want to be. We love this church and this place. But when I went to, it wasn't really an interview. It was really like, hey, come to Lexington, just check it out, see if you like it. And we were in an interview, kind of a round table with some of their leaders. And the way I described it, I felt like parts of my heart were waking up in that meeting.
Oh, wow.
More from an artist standpoint, just feeling like, man, this could be a place where I could really flourish fully as an artist. And because in Roanoke, it wasn't that they were, they weren't holding me back or saying I couldn't do things. I just didn't have the time to do the things that I wanted, because I was essentially doing young adults ministry and worship ministry, and it was just hard. And so there was just this shift that started to happen. And what's interesting is my wife kind of picked up on it before I did and really was like, wow, this really could be a place where Justin could flourish in ways that he never has.
That's cool. God bless our wives.
Yeah, no kidding.
Or husbands.
Yeah, yeah.
Rachel.
Yes. I've flourished. We've been here, gosh, almost 5 years, I think. Yeah, 5 years in July.
Wow.
And I have flourished artistically, musically, in ways that I never have. But what's interesting is, you know, and this actually plays a lot into my creative process, but anxiety and depression has always, well, for not always, for probably over a decade, has been a reality for me. And when we moved to Lexington, it got worse. And I don't think that wasn't because, oh, this isn't the right place, or I think there was this tension that I felt between God's clear calling on my life and just that internal struggle that those who struggle with that have, and just feeling like, oh, this is going to be where I'm found out. People are going to realize I'm a fraud, all those things.
Why would you feel like a fraud? Is it because you started out not doing church music, or can we dive into that just a little bit? Not that I want to be your therapist, but just, I think I want to get into the mind of a songwriter, especially a church songwriter.
Yes.
Because there is a war that goes on in there.
Yep.
And
yeah.
I war with it myself, and I just want to hear someone else say it instead of me.
Yeah. Are you a licensed therapist?
No.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
I'm kidding. No, I, okay. So 2019 was just a really hard year for me. One of the hardest ones I've had, not circumstantially, just emotionally, spiritually. But it was by far the most fruitful year creatively of my life.
Mm.
And what I've had to learn as I've wrestled through this stuff is what it kind of means to be to steward well our pain and our suffering, that all those things we experience can be Genesis moments. I use the language of Makoto Fujimura.
Yeah.
He's a Japanese American artist and has written a lot on faith and culture and
culture care.
Culture care. Yeah. And that's one of his three G's, is Genesis moments, basically taking these moments of suffering, of hardship, and making something beautiful out of them. And I've reflected some just on 2019 and just thinking, wow, it's wild that in the midst of my hardest year, I was writing a lot and writing some of the best stuff I've written. And mm-hmm. I think some of that is just, there is something about digging into those things and stewarding it that reveals, I think, the heart of God that we often miss when we just pretend like everything's okay. Mm-hmm. And Rachel, I know you talk a lot about lamentation, and I always try to get that language flowing kind of in our midst and just telling people like, hey, you actually can go to God and be really honest and shout and scream. Like he can handle it.
Yeah.
In fact, he's already given you the language, you know, in the Book of Psalms.
Well, that was your co-write together, wasn't it? He can take it. Is that what
that song? Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is about that. But I think in terms of the internal struggle and feeling like a fraud, I mean, some of it is just simply me buying into the lies that I am those things when circumstantially everything is saying otherwise. Mm. You know, work's going well. You know, I'm writing songs that are resonating with people, but there's just still part of me that's like, man, at some point people are going to realize that these really aren't that great. And I really don't know what I'm doing. And I mean, some of it may be, I constantly feel like I'm behind, you know, if you imagine a kind of a line, long line of this is life lived, you know, that there are these markers along the line that I should have hit at this age. And I think, oh man, I'm so far behind. And it's like, by whose standard? And I just have to, it's just this constant returning to, okay, who is God? What has he said about me? How does he view the world? How does he understand time and, accomplishment and all that? And so it really, a lot of it is just kind of this daily process of repentance and trust. But I do think some of it is just the way I found myself into what I'm doing now. It's just taken a while. But it doesn't kind of suddenly eradicate all the other things I've done in the past. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't just randomly, it wasn't like, oh, I think I'll go to Virginia. That sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. Roanoke was a very clear, it was like, I think we're supposed to go to Roanoke. And I think it was just part of the process. And so, I mean, in a lot of musically, a lot of my training is just more self-taught. And so, it's easy for me to feel intimidated by, you know, someone who's brilliant and classically trained and all that. And my pastor here, when I first moved here, he's like, man, you just got to tell on yourself. You've all these fears that you store up, they're really just vain imaginations. And so I've just had some conversations with people who I'm just like pretty upfront with, like, hey, I'm kind of intimidated by you. And I feel like if we work together, you're going to realize I'm full of it. And it's so liberating because a lot of the time those people are like, oh, I've kind of had those feelings too. And from the outside looking in, you kind of think, oh, you're crazy. Like, but I think that's probably how people look at me sometimes and like, how could you think that? Mm-hmm. And
well, so many of the artists that we know and talk with, we all struggle with actually the same things. And part of it is the culture in which we find ourselves artistically in the church, where we always feel, maybe not always, but so many people feel like I'm not qualified, you know, to bring my offering to the community because I'm not a professional, or I haven't been trained, or I don't get paid for it, or I'm not famous. And it's amazing what that does to us. And it just kind of puts artistic expression in this straitjacket kind of thing where it's like, you know, it just continues to lessen the pool of artistic expression in the church when we allow that those feelings to take over us, you know. And thank God for a community and a pastor who helped walk you through that. That's That's encouraging to me.
Yeah, that's a good word. I would say first, being in a place where the arts are valued, where original content is valued, it has been really good for my soul. It's been to the extent that my pastor has been very protective of my time. I mean, there are a lot more like pastoral duties I could probably take on. And he, a lot of the time, purposefully protects me from those things because he really values me as an artist. And it's not even like, I don't think he could do this. It's just like, he doesn't need to do it. And that's not really what we hired him to do. I've got a friend in Knoxville, who's a worship pastor, and I challenged him recently, man. I'm like, you got to go to your pastor and say you need more time to create, because he's wearing two hats at his church as well. He's doing pastoral duties, but he's a brilliant songwriter. And when I talked to him, it'd probably been a year. He's like, man, I've written a song. And I'm like, man, that can't happen. And it's taken me a community. It's taken a community for me to realize that I need to be protective of my creativity. I need to be protective of these blocks of time that I create to write.
Yeah. How do you do that? So how do you, like, can you be uber practical? Like, how do you be intentional with family, you know, wife and kids and ministry job, that we all know if it's more of a lifestyle than a job because it just is all engrossing, you know? How do you practically do that? How do you carve out time? How do you protect time?
Well, my family is probably the first thing to go. I'm just kidding.
I was like, wait.
No. Maybe that's too dark. Sorry. I'm thankful that my job description is one that I'm able to build. I'm able to have blocks of time in my week, kind of work hours where I'm writing. And I really try to, I try to protect those. They can kind of shift week to week, but you know, for me, so one block of time is like 2 to 5 on Fridays. And you know, that's in my schedule. And then there's another block somewhere else. A lot of the time I am more of a night owl, and my wife goes to bed pretty early, that there's some evenings where I write. It's changed. I feel like we have three kids. It becomes a little harder to do this, but, I really try 2 to 4 times a year to do a writing retreat where I go away for 48 hours by myself to a cabin, going to that songwriting workshop in Ambridge is part of that. And my wife values that so much that it's just not hard. I don't have to make this strong case to leave for 48 hours.
That's great.
That rhythm has been built into our lives for a number of years that sometimes she's the one that's like, man, I really would love for you to get a writing retreat in the next couple months. So I think, you know, there is the weekly time, kind of viewing it weekly and then maybe monthly, but also like quarterly. Like if I could take where I could go away for 2 nights, 4 times a year, mm-hmm. that fills up my tank for a while.
Yeah.
And I think too, it's been really good for me to have projects that I'm writing toward. I've had writing retreats where I just go and it's like, let's just see what happens. And those can be a little more frustrating. But a lot of time when I feel like the past few times I've gone, I've had in mind, like, okay, here's some projects I'd love to pursue. Here's a body of work that I'd like to build upon. But I do think, you know, you can set all those practical pieces, but you still have to protect it. And it's easy to make anything more urgent than creativity. Like oh man, I need to send this email. It's like, you really don't like,
that's right.
you really do have to fight for it. And
why? I mean, why is that? I find that in myself. Is it like the enemy or something? It's sort of like, I relate it to kind of like avoiding reading my Bible kind of thing. It feels like that.
Yeah.
You know, where you think of any excuse not to do it, or making dinner, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Those are kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Similar things. Mm-hmm. But I find that, you know, when it comes to creating it, it's a lot harder for me to just sit down and quietly work on something. It almost has to be this, like, I catch a melody in the air and I've got to finish it and write it down really quick. Yeah. And then I work on it. This whole quarantine time has taught me how to just sit down and start working, which is like pulling out teeth sometimes. Mm-hmm. But like, why do you think that is, Justin? What have you experienced when it comes to like just getting down to some of the nitty gritty songwriting stuff, like making yourself do it?
Yeah, I think some of it is just good old fashioned, like discipline, like just sit down. And I think what I've had to learn and what I continue to learn is I can sit down for 2 hours and get up and feel like I have nothing. Like, man, and it's easy for me to be like, man, what a waste of time. But what I realize is the next time I sit down and it just kind of, you know, just happens so quickly. I'm like, man, the 2 hours that I spent last week that seemed a waste of time somehow played into this time.
Yeah.
I just think the creative process kind of builds on itself.
Absolutely.
And I just think that's part of the discipline of it. I mean, you probably do have songwriters who only write when they feel inspired. And I just don't know how you can sustain that, you know, because I don't know. I spend so much energy doubting myself and, you know, hating myself sometimes. I'm like, I don't have any energy to like feel inspired.
Yeah.
It's like, if I'll sit down and if I can get just a little melody, or if I can write one line and kind of get the ball rolling enough where it just kind of stays in my head throughout the day, then, you know, maybe in some ways discipline like cultivates inspiration. Trademark that.
Trademark it.
I've seen that in my own life of just feeling just like, I don't have anything to say. But once I sit down and just start, just again, it's just making the time, making the space, it does build on itself. And I don't really know fully how that works. There's a great little book called The War of Art. Mm-hmm. Can't remember who wrote it. You guys may know, but it's real short. And he talks a lot about the resistance. It's not from a Christian perspective, but it's like kind of his, almost like how we would talk about the enemy and the things that bind us and entangle us. He talks about this whole idea of the resistance. It's the thing that comes in and tells you, distracts you and pulls you away. And it's a great, the way he describes it. I mean, I read it and I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And it's just this, I think a lot of time for me, it's just, I don't do it because I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And me sitting down and fighting against that and creating is, you know, kind of a small act of courage that I think that is liberating when I continue to do it.
Well, authentic creativity requires, you know, this huge emotional investment. It's bearing part of your soul, part of your heart. And even if it's just you seeing it at first, I think it does well up these fears of like, you know, even if I'm just releasing it into the air at this point or on a piece of paper, like there's something out, you know, inside of me coming out. And that can be freaky. I mean, that can be scary. And I think it hits on artistic buttons in us to be like, you know, well, if it doesn't come out, it's not real. So I'll just keep it in for a while. Or even if I'm the only one who sees it, and if I think it sucks, then I guess again it plays on all our insecurities at the same time too. So I think it is a fight of saying, you know, no matter what. I had this friend, a good friend of mine, his pastor friend of mine, and he's written a couple books, and he always used to tell me, I had to, you know, he had to make himself sit down and write, even if he didn't know, if he didn't know what he was actually going to write. So he says, mm-hmm. I can show you like Word documents of me writing things like, I don't know what to write. I'm not sure where I'm going, but I'm writing. And he's like, you just get it flowing. And then eventually you can go back and clean it up. But it's something about, you know, intentionally engaging in that creative process that gets some of the junk out of the way and creates that path for that to flow. So
well, don't we think spiritually speaking that in emulating God, we're doing this really powerful thing that God's created us to do, to create, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that he instituted for us to do on this earth. And, you know, when we're actually going about it, when we're intentionally going about it, there is going to be this fight, the spiritual fight. And I'm just like thinking about it in my head, like the wheels are turning in my head. Cause I don't know, like it's starting to all make sense, but sure, yeah. You know, like, to me that totally makes sense. Why I would want to avoid it, because it's something that I was created to do. And, you know, and the enemy of course wants to keep us from doing the things that we are created to do. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like, man, all that time I lost not writing and being obedient. And I wonder if it's more for an artist. It's this thing of like being obedient to the Lord in creating and sitting down and being intentional and also kind of spur of the moment as well, you know, and having and emphasizing more value on it. Like your pastor who tells you to carve out time and protects you. You know, we all need that as artists.